Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Welcome to the show today. This is Ken D. Foster. You know, Voices of Courage has been out there for a while, and so many of you have told us how much you appreciate the show and what I'm doing. So I really want to thank all of you for that. Hey, today we got an amazing show. We're going to be talking about conscious conversations as opposed to unconscious conversations, right? You know, what are unconscious conversations? Well, those are conversations where you're just reacting. You know, there's nothing really conscious about it. Somebody says something to you, it triggers something in you, and you just start talking and reacting, maybe defending yourself, blaming or shaming or being an unconscious communicator. Well, today I've got a very special guest, and we're going to talk about how you can become really effective in your communication, what you can do to really start to bring your awareness into conversations as opposed to your reactions, and be able to be an observer of these conversations in a greater way so that you can become more effective. My guest has a new book out. We're going to be talking about his book. We're going to be talking about how to really up-level your communications and upshift your thinking. So if that's of interest to you, stay here. I'll be right back. We'll take a quick break, and then I'll have my guest for you. Are you ready to take charge of your health and well-being? UK Health Radio is your ultimate digital destination for cutting-edge health information and inspiration. At UK Health Radio, we know that good health is not merely the absence of disease, but a state of complete physical, mental, and emotional well-being. Tune in to our wide range of expert-led shows where renowned health professionals share about the latest research, practical tips, and inspiring stories that will motivate you to live your healthiest life. Don't settle for anything less than vibrant health. Tune in to UKHealthRadio.com, the world's number one talk health radio and podcast platform. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. Today, the name of our show is The Courage to Engage in Conscious Conversations, and I have my very special guest, Chuck Weisner, with me today. Chuck, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And for some of you people that don't know Chuck, let me introduce you to him. So Chuck Weisner is the president of Weisner Consulting. His client list includes companies like Google, Rivian, Apple, Tesla, Harvard Business School, Ford, and Chrysler. Weisner was the senior affiliated mediator with the Harvard Mediation Program and was among the first to be certified through the Mastering the Art of Professional Coaching Program at Newfield Institute. He's also a specialist in organizational learning and leadership as an affiliate with MIT's Center for Organizational Lead Learning. That's a little bit about Chuck. There's so much more. You know, these bios, sometimes we read them and we want to know a lot more. So, Chuck, how did you get involved in this piece of conscious conversations? Let's just start there.
That's a good question. I was an architect in Boston for 20 years and learned all about conflict. Because if you take a room full of really smart people, bankers and owners and contractors and engineers and architects, and they all end up, you know, in these squabbles. So that was one piece of the equation. The other piece, I had a partner who became an alcoholic, and we had to hire in some help of what to do, how to deal with that dilemma. And we hired a woman, her name was Linda Reed. She met with us individually. She met with us the group. She lifted us up. She had us see things we couldn't see. And when she was done 4 months later, I was like, wait, what just happened? How did she do that? It seemed like magic to me. And I've always had a philosophical, psychological interest, spiritual interest in life. And what she did seemed to hit all those bases. And so I started studying. And I took a four-year journey of retooling myself and studied mediation, the ontology of language, and did some work with some folks at MIT. And then I gave my partnership back and I started a whole new career.
I love it. Well, I'm on my, I think this is my fifth career. So I love it when we reinvent ourselves and take the next step. Yeah, right. Yeah. And walk into the unknown one more time. You know, words matter. Words do matter.
That's right.
And a lot of times people, I've been guilty of this myself, you know, something triggers us and we start just sputtering out words. It's almost like it comes from another part of ourself, and you step back and go, why did I even say that? Well, why are we doing that? What's happening there?
Yeah. So the two pieces to that. One is we grow up learning how to interact and have conversations and talk through our families and through our cultures. And we sort of adopt it unconsciously. And so then we end up having communication patterns, or I like to think of them as conversational fingerprints of how we learn to communicate, but never really pay attention because we're so in conversations that we don't think about our conversations until things don't go well.
Yeah, right.
Right.
No, I get it. I really get it.
So these patterns, and I like to call them patterns because it's less judgmental. It's saying, wow, I had a pattern 20 years ago before I did my studies where I would blow up at my kids and my wife and get angry. And then I realized that what I was doing was I was playing out my father's pattern. And once I could see that and separate from that, then I could say, wait a minute, I have a different choice. I can be better than that. I can respond better than that. But it takes that honest, courageous look at our pattern to be able to separate from it and go, wait a minute, there's something can I can do better. Yeah. And the second part of
I think of my own journey on the patterns. I know that we had a pattern in our family that if somebody talked to you and what would happen is it was called the increase the volume pattern. If you didn't listen, the volume got louder and louder and louder until people were screaming at you.
Yeah.
But that's a pattern I learned. That's a pattern I learned. And I would communicate that way until, like you said, you know, until things got really bad. And I got to change this pattern.
Right. So there's the patterns that we have to take a look at. And then the other part of it is, I think you mentioned our inner, where these things come from? Where do our reactions come from? We all have inner personalities, inner voices that, again, we became part of our psychology growing up. The hurt child, there's archetypes, the hurt child, the perfectionist, depressed, whatever. And so those inner voices are another thing that once we start acknowledging them and paying attention to them, they no longer can just sort of take over our lives, but we can actually manage them. And the latest neuroscience is you don't get rid of them, you befriend them. You actually work with them and say, okay, I can turn your volume down right now because I don't need you squawking in my ear that you're doing a crappy job, right? So it's this complex thing of patterns and voices. And what I like to think about conscious conversations is there's a way of thinking about conversations that brings new ears and new eyes to what we're seeing and hearing and responding to. And that's why I organized the book around four types of conversations, because the four types hold different tools to learn about how to tell our story better, or how to hold our opinions lighter, how to listen better, and how to trust our intuition. So that's sort of how the book unfolds, is to give us tools to sort of do that exploration.
Well, you know, I think we're talking about conscious conversations. When I grew up, my parents had a saying, children are to be seen and not heard. And they also had another key thing that they used to say, is that they would point out, you know, kind of people on the street and stuff, and say, those people are talking to themselves. Don't ever talk to yourself, right? So, you know, from me, it's like, well, don't talk to them and don't talk to yourself. What the heck? So, and have these two voices, right? I'm saying that to debunk that. That's not accurate. What we want to do is, like Chuck has said, become very aware of those voices in our mind, and be able to start to understand where they're coming from. And, you know, it's so interesting, because, you know, we got the conscious mind, what we're thinking now, we got the subconscious mind, and we got the superconscious mind. That we share a common database of thought, and thought's not individual, it's universal. So we have those three areas, and we're like, oh, I'm getting downloads over here. I'm hearing myself from here. You know, consciously I'm seeing this. How do we sort all of that out, my friend? Is it the intuition
Well, I think it's a combination of the main. The primary conversation in the book is called storytelling, because the universe is made of stories, not made of atoms. You know, we make up stories, and then we have money, and we have laws, and we have politics, and we have all these things based on stories that we all commonly believe or don't. And so storytelling is a beautiful thing, because we love fiction. We like to be entertained. We like to tell each other. Cocktail parties, we're telling each other stories about our lives. But they have a negative side too, which is we adopt stories growing up that don't serve us well. And so if we have the courage to look, we can say, what master stories do I have about myself that aren't serving me well? Just a quick example, I grew up with a step-grandfather who was a redneck. I was constantly told I wasn't a big enough man. I wasn't a strong enough man. And as a child, his voice had power. I didn't know any better. And I adopted that story. And I lived with that story internally for 25, 26 years of my life until I was able to bust it. So that storytelling piece is really crucial. Once we start diving in and going deeper into those things, then we have space to trust our intuition. You know, to listen, say, wait a minute, I don't have to be that guy. This is what it feels like to be a big enough man or a strong enough man.
And I think it comes also with those stories could create a false identity for ourselves. And I believe there's this other piece, okay? It's like, if you don't know who you are at a conscious level, let's call it a soul level, if you don't understand what that is, you know, where there's this place within all of us, you're a meditator, I'm a meditator, you know, that we can tap into joy and the happiness and the love and the power and the passion, get downloads of everything we need to do. It's all there for us. But if we don't realize there's a baseline here of who we, you know, really are, and then the stories that we're telling, it can be very confusing for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, the stories are like a layer on top of our deeper self, right? And so we don't have to learn about the deeper stuff. We just have to sort of remove some of those layers.
Yeah.
So there's room for it to bubble up, you know, so there's room to say, have gratitude, or be in the present moment and really be true to yourself with integrity, et cetera, et cetera. So it's layering, taking some of those layers away that aren't doing us any favors. Right.
Well, I call it like a rust over the soul. We've got these socialization from family, from friends, from church, from school, you know, and then we got these resentments and guilt and shame or remorse that's over there. And then we have these false identities and false illusions, and we can get through all that this brilliant soul shines through. So listen, the book is called The Art of Conscious Conversations. It's written by Chuck Wisner. You can get it on Amazon. And wait, this isn't the end of the show. I just want to let my audience know about it because we're going to take a deep dive into the book, why Chuck wrote that book, what are the benefits to you, my audience, and so much more as soon as we come back. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I'm talking with Chuck Wisner, and we're talking about the art of conscious conversations. All right. You got the book out there, and you wrote this amazing book. What are going to be some of the benefits that people walk away with when they read the book, Chuck?
You know, I think of it as like having a new distinction about how conversations work. And what I mean by that is if we don't have an understanding of different of the DNA of conversations, we can't navigate them as successfully. So understanding the ABCs or the DNAs of how they work and why they work and why they don't work really helps us then sort of take an inside look of how am I showing up in conversation and how can I better show up with other people in conversations. So it's like one analogy is there's fish in water who don't really aren't conscious of the water they're swimming in because they're in it all the time. They just take it for granted. We're in conversations all the time and take it for granted without really understanding the waters we're swimming in.
Yeah, I think that I know for myself, years ago, I created a company called Speaking Presence, and I took about 2,500 people through the conscious conversation courses to help them speak on camera without being prepared and just really speaking from the heart. And what I learned there is a lot about what we're talking about here. You know, we're almost afraid sometimes to speak our truth, to speak, you know, because we've got these stories in there that say, well, you speak your truth, somebody's going to come at you. And sometimes that happens. In the book, do you give some ways to, I apologize, I haven't read it yet, but I love the title of it. So I had to have you on the show. Is there ways that in the book that we can consciously communicate? You give communication models in there, or how is it laid out in there for people to learn?
Yeah. So there's four types of conversations. And they're organized in a very purposeful way. The first one is storytelling, which are the stories we tell ourselves, the story we tell others, good stories, bad stories, stories that serve us, stories that don't serve us. And that's a very deep dive, because if we have master stories that are demeaning or limiting our potential, you have to have the courage to look at inside to get through that and to undo a harmful story. Now, if we do that work and we're more aware and more conscious internally, it's like growing sort of like emotional antennas. You know, if we're more aware, we're more emotionally intelligent, we can actually read other people better. And then the second conversation is collaborative conversation, which is how do we interact? How do we solve problems together? Meetings are a great example of people not collaborating, but just everyone telling their story and then going to decide, oh, what are we going to do? But the collaborative conversation is really the art of how we can advocate our position without being arrogant or pushy or having to be the smartest one in the room. And how do we inquire? How do we ask questions of others so we can truly understand their position? That's a different set of tools in that conversation. If we do a collaborative conversation really well and learn from each other, and there's exploration and sharing of different perspectives, and then that open space, we automatically sort of move into a creative conversation where ideas can bubble up. And it's that space where our intuition, trusting our intuition, bringing more energy into our right brain versus our linear left brain, because we're very trained to be linear and rational, but our right brain is the more intuitive side, often has lots to teach us. It's a deeper master. And then the last conversation is commitment conversations, because ultimately in life, we are making promises every day. Who's going to do what by when, whether it's washing the dishes or whether it's deciding a strategy of a company, we make decisions. And that's a complicated conversation that we've never been taught about. And it has a few layers, but the idea is to make better commitments and better promises so we build trust and rather than distrust. So that's sort of a really quick layout of the four types of conversations.
Well, I can hardly wait to read that book, because I know that each one of those areas, and I love your point of view on it. You take a deep dive in it to really understand it, to become more effective in communicating. When I'm thinking about too, some of my audience out there, you're thinking, well, do I really need this? Well, here's how I judge, and maybe Chuck does this too, but I just look at results. Like, what are the results you're getting in your communications with your team members, with your family, with your wife or spouse? What are the results you're getting? And are there patterns that repeat themselves over and over and over again? You get in the same, argument over, I don't know, spilled rice, that's a good one. Anyway, the point is, are you repeating patterns? And, when we acknowledge, as soon as you can acknowledge what's not working, you can heal it, you can change it, you develop it. And that's really what the book's about. Chuck, can you provide some real life examples of how transforming one's awareness with stories can lead to collaboration and creativity? I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. So another key part of the book is I talk about four archetypal elements that are part of every conversation. So if you discover you want to dive into a story that's not serving you well, the four elements of what are your desires, what are your concerns for the future, what are power authority issues at play, and what are the standards? And those four elements, if people take nothing else away from this conversation, take a sticky note and write down desires, concerns, authority, power, and standards, because it becomes a really lovely way to check our own voice and a way to inquire with other people and engage with other people in a more productive way. So an example would be, a very simple example is my wife and I, years ago, we've been married 42 years, we'd get arguments about, we'd have a party or we'd be late at night and we're going to bed. And she, her standard was to clean up the kitchen. So she woke up with a clean kitchen. My standard was go to bed, do the dishes in the morning. And, that could create a lot of tension, who does what and disagreement. But when we labeled that as just standards instead of right and wrong, she and I could sort of get much lighter about it and find ways to compromise and take turns because we weren't arguing about who was right. We were saying, oh, we just have different standards. Nobody's right. Nobody's wrong. And let's play with that. Let's see what we can do with that. That's a very different approach to a conflict than just going at it and trying to prove I'm the smart one or I have the best answer. So that's an example. And then the other example is in meetings, when people are in meetings. And generally, I think the problem is we do what I call a conversational bypass. People love to tell their stories. And then whoever is the loudest in the room or has the most stripes in the room says, okay, what's next? What are we going to do? Right. And that's a conversational bypass, because we leap from storytelling to action. And the middle two conversations, where we collaborate and co-create, don't happen. And those are the juiciest conversations, where we learn from each other and change minds and influence each other, trust our intuition.
Well, I think for those conversations to happen, we have to have pauses in the conversations, and we have to have some active listening going on. In other words, we're not thinking about what we're going to say next. We're really there for that individual, listening to what they're saying and respecting that piece. Because I've been in those meetings that goes from one person to the next person to the next person. It's like, oh, I've also been on those shows where the host won't let me get a word in, right? So I want to give you a word on that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I think that's why the storytelling conversation is so important, the work that we do individually. Because if we go into a meeting with a clenched fist saying, I'm right, I have the right answer, or it could even not be a meeting, it just be, I know this is right about how the world should be, and we go in a clenched fist. And then other fists join in. Well, we're in a battle where I'm trying to prove you wrong, they're trying to prove me wrong, and it's a battle. What I say is the best way to do this is to not, you don't have to give up your position, but you have to be willing to open your hand and let others know why you're thinking and how you're thinking. Because you can say, this is wrong, right? Or you can say, here's my concern, here's my standard, and here's what I'd like to have happen, my desire. That way we're coming into an open hand conversation and we're inviting others to do the same. And instead of this, we can end up joining hands and creating a mutual learning dance or whatever you want to call it. And so, but you know what? This is arrogance. This is humility. This is being the smartest one in the room. This is being vulnerable. So it takes that effort and that change to really have a collaborative conversation.
Okay, I want my audience to get it. This is knowing it all. This is being open and receptive to others' points of view. I love what you said. You don't have to back out of your point of view, but usually, you know, some people think that it's black and white. And if you've got, you know, if you're thinking in black and white terms, is this way or that way, you're most of the time you're really off base. And because there's many other choices, there's many other points of view. It's like a diamond. The issue is here. Here's the diamond. There's many facets to that diamond that you can look at from different points of view. You know, I think one of the hardest things for people to get off of is what you're talking about. We're kind of dancing around it, but that's that right and wrong issue. I'm right. You're wrong. This is the way it is. I've had the experience. I've done this before, and you don't know what you're talking about. It's that kind of thinking that really stops conversations. The creative process shuts down as soon as we're in that place. Thoughts?
Yeah. So if we unwind it a little bit, if we think about it from young school age, where we raise our hand because we have the answer. We don't raise our hand because we have a question to ask the teacher. You know, are you really sure about that, teacher? We raise our hand to have the answer. And then we go into business and we are paid more because we're experts and we're paid to have the answers. Trouble is that teaches us to be knowers. And it's sort of this, it's pretty common. Leaders I work with suffer from this. So it's a very common thing to think, oh, I have the answer, or I need to have the answer, or I need to be the smartest one in the room. But if you switch that, it's how do we become a learner instead of a knower? How do we have that learning mentality, you know, almost childlike wonder, like, well, what else is possible? And the third conversation, creativity, is about possibilities. So having that sort of open mind to say what's possible instead of I have the answer is a switch that takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, I love it. Well, you know, growing up as the oldest in my family, my wife is the oldest in hers. We had a lot of, you know, tell our younger brothers and siblings, you know, brothers and sisters, you know, what to do, when to do, how to do. We showed them, you know, we're leading the way. But, you know, that really model doesn't work very well in a marriage. I can tell you that. You know, we've been married 25 years, so we figured it out. But, it is that piece that we're talking about. It's a really important piece. What happens that I find out, you know, like I remember sitting in school, I'm a creative. I'm very open. I've got a lot of possibilities, a lot of thinking going on. So I got that piece too. And I remember sitting there, you know, with the person that always raised the hand, always had the answer, thinking to myself, I must be stupid. Because I had a lot of questions. I've always had questions. Right? Yeah. But you don't raise your hand. See? Well, in functional and creative environmental spaces, we do raise our hands. Oh, we do create that space. I think that's, I can hardly wait to get this book. This is really good information, Chuck.
Well, leadership is like really creating the psychological safety space so people will ask questions. So people can say, you know, let's explore or let's wonder what's possible.
Okay. All right. Listen, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about a specific exercise that you can do to improve your conversations. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
I'll be right back with my guest, Chuck Weisner. But before I get to him, I want to mention this to all of my audience out there. You know, the way that we can really help one another is to pass along information like this. So I encourage you today to be of service to your family, your friends, those that you love, and let them know about this show. Pass it on to them today. You know, it's so easy today to pass on any information. So I hope you'll do that. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you don't ever miss a show. All right, back to Chuck. All right, Chuck. All right, let's talk about, you know, a way that maybe our audience can improve their communication skills, one of the exercises that are, that's in the book. Why don't we talk about that?
Okay, I'll do two briefly. One is, I'm just going to repeat the four archetypal elements: desires, concerns, power, standards. That is a new recipe for if you're saying, if you have a judgment that is triggering you, or you're just stuck and say, it's, you know, a judgment of other people, of situation, take the time to just say, okay, what are my standards? How am I making this judgment? How am I making this assessment? You'll find that if you find a standard that you have and you're holding it really tightly, if you open a conversation by saying, you know, we might have different standards. They might be thinking of it very differently, what success looks like or what completion looks like. And it's much easier to have a conversation about a standard than it is to say, you're right, I'm wrong. And so this notion of dissecting your own opinions, because opinions are made of facts, of emotions, and then these elements, these opinions that are buried underneath our strong opinion. So if we can sort of deconstruct our opinions a bit, we become free of them and can have that open hand instead of the closed fist. Another exercise is to really learn to listen to your private conversations. So in language, we have public conversation, what we're saying out loud, and then we have the internal dialogue of what's going on inside. And one exercise, which was created by Chris Arduous 25 years ago at Harvard, before his time, is you take a piece of paper, you divide it in half, and on the right side, you write a conversation you had with someone that was triggering for you. And you write four or five exchanges. I said, you know, what do you think about the progress of the project? She said, it's too soon to tell. I said, well, we only have 2 months left. She said, we're going to be fine. And you write that exactly as if it were videotaped or audio taped. Then on the left-hand side, you write what you were thinking and feeling while you were talking and while the other person was talking. So in other words, I'm saying, what do you think about the progress of the project? And what I was thinking was, we are in damn trouble. We are not going to make our deadline. And she says, it's too soon to tell. What I'm thinking is, she doesn't have a clue what's going on. She's not doing her job. What that reveals is, it gives us an opportunity to work with that private conversation, because hidden in the private conversation, there are some golden nuggets. Like, what is my concern? Do we share desires? What are our standards? Let's have a different conversation. Let me come into this conversation differently than just with a strong judgment that she doesn't know what the hell is going on. Now, it's a deep exercise. I've done it with hundreds of people. And the result is most people, it's the first time most people really take a look at their private conversation. And then the downside is we can't bury it because that's no good for us health-wise. We can't blurt it out because that'd ruin a relationship. So we have to transform it. So we look at those private conversations, we transform them and find the golden nuggets so that we can have a better conversation. That's a brief synopsis.
Boy, I love that. I really like that exercise. That's really powerful. And, you know, I'm thinking of another example, a conversation where somebody's maybe told you, you know, I don't like your behaviors and I'd like to have a conversation around mm-hmm. that. And they don't do it immediately. They leave you a phone message or something like that. And they want to do, how do you use that before you have that conversation right. so that you're not triggered? Because what I heard in that other conversation, you had some fears and some judgments. And if that gets in the way, you're probably going to react,
right.
is what I'm guessing.
So, right.
What do you suggest to somebody that has that goal?
Well, so just that example where you're saying, I want to write someone or talk to someone and saying, what were the words you used? You're making me feel.
I think your behaviors, right. yeah, you know, your actions or your behaviors are, weren't appropriate in the situation. And I want to talk to you about it. So now the person's going, why did
I do? Yeah. Right. Yeah. So here's the turn. When we make that statement, your behaviors, we're pointing a finger. And I'm saying, let's take the other three fingers that are pointing back at me and say, you know, instead of saying your behavior is doing X, Y, and Z or is inappropriate, I can say, you know what? I have a concern about, I'm having a reaction to when you do X, this is how I feel. This is how it affects me. So now we're talking about me. We're not pointing a finger at them. And that's an amazing turn if we can do that, because they might be defensive, but they might be less defensive because we're opening our hand and saying, here's how I feel about that. And I just wanted to talk to you because I might be wrong or you might have a good reason that you did what you did, but let's have a dialogue because it doesn't feel right to me.
That's really good. You know, what you're saying is get back into the feeling. So, you know, if you, let's say you're the one that had that, you know, somebody called
trigger.
You and said that, right? So it's like you're saying, okay, you know, here's how I'm feeling about X, Y, Z. You know, try to get back into the feeling instead of the facts. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, that's a whole nother subject because facts are incredibly important. I mean, you know, yeah, in one way, you know, when I turn it back to myself, I'm saying, yeah, I was triggered. Here's my concerns or here's what I'd like to have happen. I'm just sort of revealing my thoughts, the underbelly of my opinion. Now, sometimes that doesn't work. And sometimes we have to go back to the facts. Like when I felt this way, because I heard you say X and the other person might say, no, I didn't say X. I said Y. And so now can we find some facts to agree on? To ground our conversation. And we've all experienced the dilemma with facts in the last 10 years. Alternative facts. Okay.
Well, we have, you know, everybody's got an opinion and everybody's got a mouth, you know, and I'm not sure that, you know, everybody's opinion is, you know, is necessarily accurate. In fact, I know it's not. Mine's not accurate all the time, right. You know?
No, so, it's not.
But, yeah. But if,
So facts are crucial. They're a real grounding for some difficult conversations. I've worked with teams that were really at odds, say a legal team with the finance team. They just couldn't get along and they were doing harm for the company overall. You know, we go off for a weekend retreat. All we start with, what can we agree on? And that might take a half day. That might even take a whole day. What are the four or five things we can agree on? But that starts laying a groundwork of trust, you know, and then we can explore our different concerns and our different goals, et cetera, et cetera. So a big piece of the book is really acknowledging facts and making sure that we use them in a productive way.
You know, one of my friends, his name is Stephen Covey, Stephen M. R. Covey. He wrote a book, The Speed of Trust, right? You may be familiar with it. How important is is trust in this conversation we're having? And by the way, I want to put up on the screen your book right now so that people know. It's The Art of Conscious Conversations. This is the book that we're talking about right now. Transforming How We Talk, Listen, and Interact. Powerful. Chuck, by the way, Chuck, where can people get the book?
It's on Amazon. You can order it from your local bookstore. Yeah, that's, you know, I think that's the easiest way to get it. Yeah.
Okay. Good. And, okay. So back to trust, you know, so basically.
Oh, and I mean to say there's also, if they go to my website, they can get a free introduction, a PDF of the introduction.
Oh, okay. And we're putting the, on the website, right there, my listening audience, it's chuckwisner.com. Chuck, chuckwisner.com for my listening audience out there. Chuckwisner.com. Yes, don't forget that. That's where you get this book. All right. So, Chuck, all right, back to this trust piece. Is a lot of that, this is what we're talking about, isn't it? It's like in that example you gave where, you know, there's the finance finance and accounting don't get along, and there's probably a breach of trust is what I guess.
There is, and it, trust is really, it's a very difficult conversation to say, I don't trust you. And so there's two things I do in the book. One is trust is made up of three major components: competency, sincerity, and reliability. Now, are they competent? Have they done what they said they would do? Are they sincere? And are they reliable? When we break it down, it's a lot easier to have a conversation. Like if you're giving someone feedback and you say, I just don't trust you. Well, if you can break it down saying, you've been reliable, but every time you do it, you're not meeting the standards, which is a competency issue. That's a different conversation to have. That's one part of trust. The other part of trust is where it really, really comes from is the last conversation, commitment conversations. We make promises day in and day out. It's like a chain of promises that we live on, you know, because I promise you to come on the show. It allows you to do something. It allows other people to hear it and allows something for them. So this chain of promises. However, we happen to do that in a sloppy way. We are addicted to yes. We don't have no as part of a conversation, and we don't know how to use counteroffers. But we are addicted to yes, which makes for sloppy promises. Now, if you and I make a promise and it's clear and it's fulfilled, that is the baseline. That's when you and I start building trust. If we make a sloppy promise and I don't deliver and you're not happy and I'm clueless, that is where distrust starts to build, right? And you say, oh gosh, I would never ask him to do that again, or he was late, or he didn't know what the hell he was talking about, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that's really is the root of how we build trust.
Now, we can go on with that one. I'm just sitting here thinking about people that can't make a commitment. They say, I live my feelings and spur of the moment. And, you know, I just don't make those kind of commitments that I can meet you at this time and this place, right? We can go on and on with that. Listen, I'm out of time. They're going to have you back. Yeah, this is too fun. I really like this conversation.
So that's great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Chuck. Stay in the green room for a minute, and I'd love to connect with you for just a second. But like I said, we are out of time. Any final thoughts from you, though? Go ahead.
Thank you very much for having me. And my parting thought was fall in love with questions instead of answers.
I love that. You know, I wrote a book called Ask and You Will Succeed, 1001 Ordinary Questions to Create Extraordinary Results. So I love that ending. Right, Chuck's book, again, one last time, Chuck, you know, people can get The Art of Conscious Conversations, go to Amazon, anywhere books are sold, and you can pick up Chuck's book. Hope you do. It's a great book. All right, Chuck, thank you so much. And thank you all for being here today. I really appreciate all of you, you know, taking the time to be here with us and be able to have this conversation so that you can maybe start seeing the unseeable more in your life, knowing the unknowable, and being able to do the impossible. Till next time, take care.